When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Donnelly view system, Diolis. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of Talking Snooker with Phil Haigh and Nick Metcalf. Once again, talking about the game we all love.
Yeah, hello. Good to be back as always on an unusual timing for us. We're recording on Friday morning, which probably has happened before. We've probably done this at the Crucible or something like that, but it's pretty rare, isn't it? The old Friday morning record.
Well, we've written the rule book up. There is no rule book as far as talking snooker is concerned, Phil. But yes, I'm heading off to I'll say sunnier climes now, because we said a very quick goodbye to summer. I mean, it felt like many days ago we had a heat wave here in the UK, but goodness me, that's becoming a memory quite quickly, isn't it? Quite a wet. How wet is it? Bit Noah's Ark here in London. Not so much today, but this week. What about you?
Not so bad up here, actually. But yeah, not great. But we haven't had the flood warnings and stuff that I've seen down in the Big Smoke.
Yeah, no, it's been very, very wet down here. Welcome to the Weather Channel, by the way. This is actually Talking Snooker, but I love small talk about the weather. You know, people say, I can't bear it. I love it. I even love when the same old cliches come along. Yeah, I've heard a bit of rain on Saturday. I've heard, yeah, clearing up Monday. I love all that nonsense. I could do that all day, probably more than snooker even, Phil. I might do that one day, you know, something like talking weather maybe, or, you know, weather small talk. That's something for the future. Right now, it's definitely snooker. And Phil, we have two tournament previews for the price of none here. Two smashing events coming up, the British Open in Cheltenham and the English Open in Brentwood. I know we've been saying it for a while, but, you know, maybe stop saying it now, because the season is clearly in full swing, and the next few weeks are going to be absolute treat for snooker fans. We'll look forward to both those tournaments in due course. Wuhan will follow straight after that. So for the players, it's mad. For us that follow the game, it's pretty mad. It's back to back to back, not even a day off. So, you know, our eyes are quite square anyway, snooker fans. They'll be even squarer in the weeks to come.
Yeah, and some serious travelling. I mean, they really are back to back to back with a trip to Wuhan thrown in there. So if anyone is lucky enough to hit a real purple patch in form, then they ain't going to get much sleep because they'll be flying here, there and everywhere. But yeah, you can't complain. This happened it must have just been before COVID, where Neil Robertson went on a real winning streak, and he went and they had a couple of tournaments in Europe. He won the European that one where he whitewashed Zhou Yulong in the final. And then he turned up at the Welsh. And I think he said he only played because he was defending champion, but he looked like he hadn't slept for a month. Yeah. It was really like that. So, yeah, that could be the case for anyone who hits form in the coming weeks. But, you know, after a couple of seasons complaining where there aren't enough tournaments, no one will be complaining that there's too many. I'll rephrase that. They probably will complain, but they shouldn't.
There'll definitely be complaints because that's the nature of the game. I think he reached the quarterfinals, didn't he, Neil? Did it kind of from memory, didn't he? I mean, it was absolutely, yeah, whacked out. It has to be said, you know, there was a time, I think maybe around the time you were saying, when a lot of people in the snooker community were saying, well, everything should be bunched together. Some sports do that. F1 comes to mind, doesn't it? Very, very different sport in every sense. But, you know, despite all the faults and sins of the F1 business, they do group those races in different parts of the world together more, so they can sort of save a little. Well, it's so damaging for the environment, F1. Let's not shower it with compliments too much, but at least they will do that. But of course, you know, various big hitters in the sport, you know, from the officialdom world said, well, it's all well and good, but of course, you know, certain TV companies, certain venues, you know, they want events at a certain time. So you can't just really, you know, we'd like to bunch all the Chinese events together maybe, but they want them at a certain time. So listen, it's a nice problem to have, as you say, but there'll be a lot of crisscrossing. And I guess the problem comes when some of those really, really top players, if they reach finals, you know, they reach a couple of these and they play, you know, then they'll have to be rescheduled a bit later for the next one. So yeah, it's pretty mad stuff, isn't it? But I like this British and English being close together first, because they've both got a certain cachet. I think the English could be a little bit better and bigger still. I think that's probably down to venue. Maybe we'll talk about that in a wee while, but I think they can feed off each other, can't they? You know, one's ending, one's starting. They flow together nicely. And, yeah, we're really looking forward to it. I mean, the British is just a smashing event since it's come back. And, you know, no doubt this one will be just as good, the third edition of the British Open. And that's all to come then, Phil, on this episode. But we must first stop for a few moments and pay tribute to Perry Mans, who has died at the age of 82. The left-handed South African followed in the footsteps of his father, Peter, who was a snooker professional, with Perry turning pro in 1961. He will be very much remembered as a famous face from the early days of television snooker in the 1970s, when he enjoyed some really memorable success. He reached the World Championship final at the Crucible in 1978, and then won the Masters at Wembley Conference Centre in 1979, beating Alex Higgins in the final. And as a fair few listeners have pointed out, Phil, he also won Pot Black before those two fine achievements in 1977. And it should be remembered that was such a big deal on TV at the time. Perry Mans continued as a professional deep into the 1980s. His last World Championship was in 1986, before he retired. He actually made a comeback to our screens in a seniors Pot Black special in 1997, and he always remained a key figure and a popular presence on the South African snooker scene, and his death clearly marks the end of a long era. A famous name indeed from snooker's past, Phil, and the depth of the tributes from across this sport show just what a big character he was, particularly in those days when this sport really started to become a big deal on television in the 70s.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, obviously before our time, but very famous name. And there's some clips you can watch of him on the internet, especially that last frame of that Masters win where he beat Alex Higgins in the final. And yeah, looked great doing it. I mean, what a run that was through that tournament. Beat Cliff Thorburn, Ray Reardon, and Alex Higgins. So it's not too shabby, that, is it? And I think it's a bit sad almost that it is obviously an anomaly. It's worth noting that he won that tournament without making a 50, but that's almost sort of, I don't know, it's not an insult, is it? But it's just like, it doesn't sound great. But, you know, to win that tournament, however you do it, is very, very impressive. So amazing stuff. And yeah, world finals, when you had to win an enormous amount of frames to get through there. Obviously, there were fewer rounds, but yeah, that world final he got to in 1978, lost 25-18 to Ray Reardon. And who did he beat on the way there? I've got it here. John Spencer, Graham Miles, and Fred Davis. We're going 18-16 against Fred Davis. That must have taken a while. So, yeah, obviously a really, really amazing player at the time. And, yeah, the clips you see of him, photos or videos, a real snappy dresser. Had some real standout waistcoats. I don't know if anyone's seen them, it's worth looking up. But, yeah, a great figure from snooker's past, and very sad news that he passed away.
Yeah, very much so. And, of course, most of the attention on that 78 semi has been on Fred Davis because of the age he was at the time. But actually, forget that Perry was on the other side and won that. And actually, that world final was very close right until the end, actually. I think the last session, there was one frame in it. Ray Reardon then sort of pulled away. So it was a lot closer than, you know, for a lot of that match, and the scoreline eventually showed. But yeah, you're right that, yes, you know, to point out, you know, pretty snappy with those waistcoats back in the day. Really good long potter as well. Lots of nice clips going around. He really smashed in some, you know, fabulous long pots. And yeah, you know, it is the end of an era, as we say. He was, you know, a really big figure. You know, people talk about Pot Black, and that was when it was so big on television. You know, that one frame show, of course, the BBC put out, that started in 1969, went into the 70s. Perry Mans was a key figure on that. And then when TV coverage first started properly from the World Championship, it was the first time it was ever, you know, shown in extended form with extended live action in 78. So viewers would really have known him. And I'm conscious that some of the sort of more mature members of the snooker community would say that they've seen quite a lot of events. Some of them pointed out he was the first player they saw, one of the first players they saw. So he really was a, you know, big figure back in the day. And we should say, you know, from us here and everyone at Talking Snooker, we send our condolences to the family and friends of Perry Mans. Phil, as we say, the snooker season is about to step up another level. We have back-to-back tournaments. What a treat for fans. We'll look ahead to two of them in this episode. The English Open in Brentwood to come. First up, the British Open in Cheltenham. Said it before, you know, what a reintroduction it's been for this tournament. We've had two cracking additions so far. That summer tournament in Leicester in 21, when the COVID pandemic was very much still a central feature of our lives. We had the, well, rather unseemly match between Mark Allen and Riyad Evans so far, but it's early on in that, but certainly attracted the headlines. We had that FA Cup style format draw, didn't we? That's really created a lot of interest in this. Mark said we drew Sean Murphy. I was having a look back. I kind of thought just a few months on from their world final, Phil. Very short matches and a brilliant winner in the great Mark Williams. And then last year in Milton Keynes, well, it was very good again, frankly. We saw a maximum from Mark Selby, some outstanding play from Mark Allen, and then that surprise in the final when Ryan Day stepped up to the plate in brilliant fashion to beat Allen and claim his biggest ever title success. Even though he was saying, you know, at one stage, he'd rather watch the football instead of playing in that final, but he was very, very good. And frankly, this tournament in its new incarnation has just been very strong.
Yeah, it was an interesting end to that tournament, wasn't it? He had that awful semi-final run against Robbie Williams, whereas Mark Allen was playing brilliant. I think Mark says that even though he had that amazing season last season, won those three tournaments, he played his best at the British Open, which he didn't win. And yeah, so they went into that final. I can't remember what the odds were, but considering Ryan Day is a very, very good player, the odds were very one-sided because the form was very contrasting. But yeah, Ryan stepped up and pulled it off. So that was, brilliant stuff. And yeah, considering this tournament was sort of thrown together a bit 2 years ago, last minute, just they needed something really to fill in a gap while they were still putting the calendar back together as COVID sort of slightly went away. And they came up with this, and I think it's been a great success. Those best of fives at first were, you know, it was what it was at the time, but I think we all wanted a bit longer, even though it created some chaos. So I think the format they've got now is great. And yeah, it's something to look forward to early in the season. I've only heard good things about the sort of the uniqueness of the tournament with the FA Cup style draw and stuff. Even the players that have sort of come out the wrong side of it, as it were. I remember speaking to Sean Murphy that first year when he got Mark Selby first round, but he was all for it, even though he'd sort of come out worse for it. So, it's been almost entirely positive about the British Open so far, which is good stuff.
And the words entirely positive are not always appropriate when it comes to the snooker community, Phil. Now, we have some really nice matches to come early on, actually. The number one highlight of the round one matches on Monday, I would say, is probably going to be Luca Bissell against Ding Junhui. I mean, Luca on the absolute crest of a wave, just reached the final in Shanghai. Ding unpredictable, but their head-to-head record tells us Luca's never beaten Ding. So really interesting match to come. Unfortunately, we're not going to see the man on the other side of that equation in Shanghai, the winner of the tournament, Ronnie O'Sullivan. He's pulled out for medical reasons. So we got friend of the podcast, aren't they all, Phil? Stephen Hallworth will play Jimmy Robertson instead on Monday. Ronnie a miss, but there's you know, to bang that drum, there's plenty of great stars and you know, great attractions still to look forward to. Mark Allen against Anthony McGill, their first meeting for 7 years, Phil. I've been looking at head-to-heads, quite surprised about that. Just, you know, sometimes these top pros don't play each other. Very unusual. Defending champion Ryan Day's got Sean O'Sullivan first. An old Leicester match caught my eye, Mark Selby against Ben Wollaston. And it'll be really interesting to see how young Stan Moody fares against one of the players of the season so far, Barry Hawkins. So I can't really predict the results, Phil. None of us can. But I can say with certainty, we're in for a cracking first day.
Yeah, definitely. It's, you know, it's a bit like those Home Nations first days where you get all the big players in one. But I suppose in the difference there is all those often sort of one-sided matches where we've got some real crackers there. Yeah, I mean, Ding against Lucre and Allen against McGill really stood out. And yeah, I like the look of Wollaston against Selby as well. Little Leicester derby. Shame it's not where it was in Leicester before, in Cheltenham this year. But yeah, no, that's true. That's a great day to look forward to. And yeah, yeah, Ronnie, medical issues. I was actually speaking to his manager, Jason Francis, yesterday about the 900, and he said I think it's his elbow problem that she's been dealing with for some time now. We don't know, do we, really? He hasn't played. He's not played much this season. He's just played in Shanghai, and he looked all right there. So hopefully we'll see him in Brentwood. I think we usually do see him in the Home Nations events, don't we, because he plays in the Eurosport events. So, but a miss, but another great opportunity for Stephen Holworth, who I looked at that, actually, because Stephen's sort of not at the top of the order of merit from Q School, which is why these things are done by. And I think it's because someone had to fill in, Rory McLeod had to replace someone in when the qualifiers for these were done, because all the other guys higher up the order of merit were not available. So even though they might be available now, they'd got as far as Rory when they needed to then, and Stephen's the next one down there. So my understanding, it wasn't explained on the statement, but my understanding is that why Stephen's got the nod now, which is a great opportunity. He actually had a run, was it last year? I think when he got quite deep, he beat Hawkins. So I think he got to last 16. So yeah, great opportunity for Stephen. And yeah, cracking first day there.
I'd forgotten that. Good run, yeah. Now it's in the recesses of my mind, now you say it. But yeah, sometimes it can be a free run, can't it? Late entry, you know, absolutely nothing to lose. So, you know, it could be dangerous. It'll be interesting to see. Some round two matches that catch the eye. Well, David Gilbert's got Lou Howshan. And, well, had a look back at their sort of history, and they played in this tournament last year, Lou winning 4-3. And at last month's European Masters, Lou winning 5-1 there. And the really interesting thing is that I was conscious of you saying I know you speak to Dave a fair bit, and you were saying, oh, we know he's really started the season well. That's his only defeat, actually, so far this season, including the Championship League. So a bit of a revenge mission for Dave, perhaps, coming up in that one. Nopal Sankam has got Fergal O'Brien. That caught my mind there. Perhaps a possible bit of a contrast there in styles. As, you know, are some nice matches here coming up, Phil. And I'm going to ask you to guess one of the years. Out of three here, I'm definitely not going to do one, because I think you and everyone else will be miles out, because it's one of those massively surprising ones. But I think you might get quite close. You might have looked it up, I don't know, with Ken Doherty against Matthew Stevens. I think you'll get pretty close.
I haven't looked it up. 97.
Brilliant guess. I thought you'd get close. It was the 96 Welsh Open. I think it was around the time you kind of expect. Similar maybe for Andy Hicks, Graham Dott, first match in the 97 Benson and Hedges Championship. But the one that really surprised me, and I had double-checked this, so, you know, maybe I should have triple-checked it. But anyway, as far as I'm aware, Rod Lawler against Dominic Dale. I mean, I thought their first match would have been miles before the 2003 Irish Masters. I mean, they'd have been a decade, wouldn't they, pros? Maybe more before then. But anyway, that happens. But yeah, they've got a lot of history anyway, these players. Mm-hmm. And another one I'll be sure to keep an eye on, Phil, is Ishpreet Singh Chadha, who a lot of people are talking about so far this season. He's playing Stuart Bingham. And I think you tee this up when we had our, maybe laugh actually, when we did our preview of the draw when it came out some weeks ago, the Northern Snooker Centre Derby, David Grace against Sanderson Lamb. So a bit of Northern Snooker Centre pride at stake there. And quite a lot beyond that, clearly. But that's an interesting one. So again, nice matches. But yeah, Dave Gilbert doesn't like Lou Howshan at the moment, Phil. You want to turn that round?
Yeah, no, I watched that game in the European Masters where he lost quite sort of convincingly to him. So yeah, I don't know if there's a, I don't think there's any problem with that style of play or anything, but he just come up against him playing well. So yeah, he will want to turn around the round because, as you say, he's won a lot of his, or all of his first round matches, but he'll want to go a bit deeper than just first rounders. So we'll see how he goes there. And yeah, Sanderson Lamb, we've mentioned him a couple of times. His great start of the season continued this week. We'll get to the international championship qualifiers soon, but he had another good win there. So he's won all of his first rounders. He got through his championship league group and won every single first round qualifier match. So yeah, great stuff from him. So that'll be interesting, as I say, derby there. And then, yeah, it's a bit of a lopsided stuff because we've had the held over matches. So even though it's the random FA Cup style draw, which is sort of an exciting thing to do when we're there, we already know second round draws. So there's a couple of if they win sort of things. So if Lisowski and Sean Murphy win their first games, they meet in the second round, which is pretty brutal. And that we mentioned Allen against McGill in the first round. If they, the winner of that gets the winner of Kyron Wilson and Martin O'Donnell. So if that's Kyron Wilson, then Mark Allen and Anthony McGill have drawn the short straws there. Other possible second round matches we can get: Stephen Maguire against Mark Williams, Rob Milkins against Barry Hawkins, and Si Jiahui against Neil Robertson. Oh. So yeah, this sort of random draw really does throw up some blockbuster stuff, which is great for us, not so great for the players necessarily, but very entertaining.
Oh, yes. I was giving it a few. Oh, there. That was some lovely old games, potential games to come in that tournament. And enjoy it if you're going and based in the UK. For many people, it will be the majority of us television. But, you know, I should say Cheltenham, beautiful old spa town. It's a place I know well from racing. Never been to snooker there. I think it's called the Centaur Building, isn't it? It's at the race course. One of the great venues in sport. I've been many times. I think I said on here, the National Hunt Festival, absolutely adore that. But yeah, I mean, as I say, first time I wondered whether it was the right venue, but I think ticket sales are quite good the second time they had events there. I think they've had different events every time, haven't they? In Cheltenham's life in snooker so far, I don't think that they've ever had the same one yet. But anyway, if you're going, as I say, you know, enjoy the delights of Cheltenham as well. If you have time during your visit, it's the most lovely, delightful place. And yeah, just a really good week ahead, I think, Phil. You know, live on ITV, we know how they cover tournaments so well here in the UK. And as we always say, go to WST for your arrangements elsewhere in Europe and around the world. Yeah, and then just, yeah, the FA Cup stuff. The FA Cup stuff sort of draw comes into its own a bit more later, I think, doesn't it? Because it gets a bit more manageable, especially when they do them live. That's so you get a few oohs and ahs there, I can tell you. That's really when it's sort of, you know, great stuff. But as we said many times over, generally across tournaments, but even in this one, when you can get big hitters drawing each other at any stage, you tend to get good winners. I mean, Ryan Day was a bit of a surprise, but he's still a top player. Mark Williams the year before. We are getting the odd sort of quarterfinalists, semi-finalists are kind of a bit of a turn-up, but, you know, you still tend to get the sort of best emerging at the end. But nevertheless, you know, it does open it up to some extent, doesn't it? You know, when players can draw each other. So, you know, it's something that, as you mentioned, it's the UK Open Darts they do it in, isn't it? Mm. I think it's been an important addition, this, actually, in many ways, just for something. It's just so different, isn't it?
Yeah. And obviously, everyone all gets the same opportunity. You can't complain. You know, the top players, you know, if they want to win tournaments, they've got to beat other top players at some point. And although we mentioned a couple of those second round draws, there's stinking sort of first and second round draws. You're unlikely to just get top players all the way through. So, yeah, and it just give the opportunity to some other players. You know, you might get some easy draws than you would normally get. So we'll see. Yeah, I mean, last year, I'd actually forgotten it was in Milton Keynes last year, but that's where it was last time round. Nopon got to the other semi-final. He lost to Allen. Robbie Williams lost that long semi-final to Ryan, the quarter-finalists that lost out. Liu Haoxian, the aforementioned, Yuan Sijun, Jamie Jones, and Selby. Actually, Selby Allen was the high-profile quarter-final there. So, yeah, unpredictable, but we don't mind it. I assume it's going to be the same as before. Rob Walker doing some of the draws live on TV, which it does add to a bit of excitement, you know. Like, what, we don't get to see draws normally, and these random ones, a bit of tension, bit of interest. So, yeah, I think it's generally been very popular.
Yeah, and I'd actually forgotten those semis until you mentioned them. And I'm pretty sure that was the one that was over very, very quickly in the afternoon. I think it was on the main channel. So they filled in with a Ken Doherty, Stephen Hendry exhibition, actually, Ken telling a lot of gags. And the second one really dragged on that Saturday night. But actually, I do remember that quite well, because I was at the doubles before. I keep thinking I was at the British, but I wasn't. I was at the doubles the weekend before. I did that kind of tallying the events together thing, which I do remember. Manchester this season, is it? Is it the doubles before the tour? I think it's that way. A clever way of doing it, frankly. Talking about a lot of people actually went to the mixed doubles final, and then the first day, the British, that was a really nice way of doing it. Anyway, we look forward to it. The British Open to come in Cheltenham. And we should say, you are listening here to Talking Snooker with Phil Haig and Nick Metcalf. The English Open in Brentwood, Phil. I'm not saying the poor relation of the home nations, the English, but I think it's the one that the Scottish has had issues as well, actually, not least being held in England and Wales. But I don't think the English has got anywhere near the traction the Northern Ireland's got, anywhere near, actually, really. And it hasn't got the history of the Welsh. Nevertheless, it's, you know, it's a good tournament. It's the second year now in Brentwood, isn't it? We were going to do one of our live episodes there, weren't we, until the snow got in the way. I don't think we'll be seeing snow this time in early October. But anyway, all those lead to Essex for this one. And maybe I'll let you lead off this time. It's the first home nations event of the season. And I've said many times, I love from a newsman point of view, I love the bang, 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 everything happening. First few days, absolutely bewildering, which is where we all need Phil Haig in our lives, frankly, to help us through the confusion.
Yeah, they are manic, the starts to those home nations events. Brentwood, we weren't sure about that, but it certainly was very well attended last year. Hopefully it will be again. I mean, Essex, hotbed for snooker, obviously. We know all the players that have come out of there. Many of the best players ever. So it's good that it has got an event there. And it's probably good that it's a bit earlier in the year, because that snow really sort of ruined it. Not ruined it, that's not wrong, but it disturbed it. And especially when the heating was broken. I don't know if you remember that. The heating was broken in the arena the first day. So people were sat there in their coats. And also, was that not the tournament where some of the suspensions for players were being announced as well? So it was all being quite badly disrupted by a number of things. But nevertheless, it was a successful event, despite those things. Yeah. Great winner in Mark Selby, that final against Luca. I think it went down pretty well in Brentwood. So hopefully even better this time around. And yeah, like we always say with these home nations, we've got these sort of blockbuster opening Mondays because all the top players are held over. So on the opening day, the standout match probably there, John Higgins against Marco Fu. With Marco sort of so far down the rankings, he's such a wild card there to be thrown in against these big names. And I don't know if you looked their head-to-head, we'll play that game again.
I'm going to say 2000.
Have you looked up?
Yeah. I did. Why can't I just tell little white lies? I'm a sinner. We all are. But I am honest. I will say that about myself. I am honest. And I sort of always have been. I did look it up. Carry on.
They've been playing for a long old time now. And actually, all competitions included, Marco's got a winning record, 12-10 with two draws. And he beat him in the Hong Kong Masters, of course. last year, made that 147. So, yeah, that's a very interesting first round game. Ronnie O'Sullivan, as I said, we expect him to be there playing Andrew Padgett first round. Lasowski against Matthew Stevens. That's a rematch from the Crucible recently. Very attractive looking game there. Selby against Jing Xiao, who's one of the new pros in China. Sanderson Lam, again, we've mentioned his good form. He gets crack at Neil Robertson, who, yeah, got to the semis in Shanghai, but we haven't seen loads of. So Sanderson, best of seven, you know, he got half a chance there. The world champ, Luca Brasel against Stan Moody. Big test for Stan there, but should be interesting. And Liu Hongyu, another one of the new young Chinese players who we've mentioned a couple of times on here. He's had some impressive results, getting a crack at Sean Murphy, so that'd be good. And Hawkins, man of the moment, really, looked in great form. We've seen great form again this week, winning 6-0 in the qualifiers against Anthony Hamilton. Always a big test for anyone. So, yeah, plenty to look forward to on that Monday, as there always is, on these opening days of the Home Nations.
Yeah, you tee those up very nicely. Yeah, can't really add a lot more to that. I thought, you mentioned that Hong Kong match. That's what I know they've been playing each other for nearly a quarter of a century, but that recent match is the one that I remembered. I thought, yeah, because Marco made that maximum. I loved that shot of John Higgins just giving a lovely sort of round of applause and as he sort of congratulated him for winning the match. It was a classic bit of sort of sporting behaviour from John, but that was that. I think everyone was so pleased to see Marco back in the big time and, you know, just making that maximum in front of those that huge crowd. It was smashing, really.
And the decider as well.
The decider. That's what I mean. He wasn't just clapping him for the maximum. It was kind of the you won the match moment. So it was just a lovely embrace moment there. As you say, yeah, Ronnie O'Sullivan against Andrew Padgett. We're playing Jackson Page there. So that, I think Jackson will be interested to potentially test himself against Ronnie. Yeah, that Lasowski-Stevens. I think I'm right in saying that in a lot of those build-ups to that, Jack was saying how much of, you know, he admired Matthew and enjoyed watching him growing up. So there's that nice element to that with their age gap there. And, well, another one, not sure you said Michael White, Matthew Selt that I spotted. Big difference in ranking, but, you know, White's such a good player, so that could well be worth a watch. And one that you may not have said, Judd Trump's got Sean O'Sullivan, I noticed. Just met twice before in short matches, and Judd won them both, no surprise. Yeah, and Hawkins Hamilton. Yeah, and I had a look at their head-to-head, and I think I had an inkling of memory for this, and it sort of backed it up, that, of course, Hamilton did beat Hawkins en route to his most famous ever win, which I ludicrously kept saying was in the Home Nations event at the part. I don't know why that stuck in. It was, of course, the German Masters in Berlin, but it was a quarterfinal on the way to that, so happy memories for Hamilton of that particular matchup. Winner of that place, Graham Dott. So, you know, plenty of experience among that sort of triumvirate thrill. I feel like I've been a bit over mean to the Ignis show. I don't think there's anything wrong with the name of the tournament or the fact it tends to kick off the Home Nations. You know, all that's great, but I think it has been a venue issue. Maybe some of that's the pandemic, but pretty nomadic. We know about Manchester, the rain on the roof. We know about Barnsley, me being asked if I wanted a towel every time I went in the press room to have a swim. We know about, was it Crawley? I think I did one of the finals down there. And that's a bloody million miles out of Crawley. Forget the classic Ronnie talk. I mean, that was a hell of a... I suppose I'm still not on that walk now, Phil, back to the town centre. That was a long... miles out of Crawley, that place.
Yeah, I walked up there from the train station. All up, I remember it being uphill. Maybe that was just a mindset thing. But
I think a bit of MK. Now Brentwood. So, listen, I'm going to pop down there for one of the days and nights myself, actually. I'm going to cut the comments out, actually, because I've not been. So I really can't judge it. I'm going to be able to judge a lot more when all being well. I will pop down there for one or two of the sessions there during the tournament. So, yeah, the English Open, we are looking forward to it. As I say, that got that real back-to-back quality. So, it's a snooker fans are going to need a lot of stamina, I mean, over the next few months, but certainly over the next few weeks, Phil. I mean, you know, some will pick and choose. You can't watch, you know, every day, for goodness sake. We've all got lives to get on with. But nevertheless, you know, it's real cracking action. All the stars, all the time. And this will be on, of course, Eurosport and Discovery. Reading between the lines, it sounds like we might be, you know, not seeing studio coverage and studio presentation of this event, which obviously will be a shame. It will clearly be for money reasons, and if that isn't the case, but no doubt we'll have our usual excellent commentary, you know, interviews that we'll see. So really look forward to it. You know, we couldn't be in better hands, frankly, with ITV for the British and Eurosport for the English and Discovery here in the UK. I know there are various, Eurosport, I imagine, will show the English across Europe, of course, but there'll be other arrangements beyond. They do say, don't they? I don't know how much of a cliche this is. We know people do have issues because they write to us, but they do say there is a way to watch the snooker now. You might have to fork out a few shillings, but there should be a way to watch it wherever you are in the world. Sometimes they put it on Facebook, don't they? There's nothing else, or Matchroom Live. So really, I mean, perhaps do let us know, because we are told, you know, with some authority, I think, that you should now be able to watch it wherever you are.
Yeah, and they always post on WST, the various places, but then you do hear, get some correspondence sometimes saying that they don't always work. But yeah, they should, certainly should be able to. So hopefully that is the case. That Hawkins Hamilton match, the one that springs to mind, isn't that one in Germany for me, is that Northern Ireland semi they had. Ooh. Where they went to the side and Hamilton like feathered the white when he had a really good chance. Ooh. And Hawkins went on to win and set up that final with Mark King. So it could well have been an Anthony Hamilton Mark King final in Northern Ireland, which would have been very interesting. Hamilton always seems to be on last. He's on again at the latest possible slot. So whenever I seem to be watching him, it's sort of creeping towards 1 a.m. But, you know, they always stick him on last for some reason. But, yeah, interesting game, though. It's going to be plenty to look forward to. It could be all sorts of changing in the rankings. All these have got ranking events coming up. So plenty of opportunity to make moves. People will have the Masters in mind in January already, I suppose. So lots of opportunities to make your impression on the ranking list. So, a lot to look forward to.
Very much so. I don't remember that shot when he... Was it Feather the Cue Ball, was it?
Yeah.
Ah! I thought maybe look up and then I'll be like, oh, of course it was that. But nice little tee up maybe to say that coming up soon, Phil, we have, thanks to you out there, our dear listeners, some of those shots you can't get out of your head. Now, of course, I put a video up of Ronnie O'Sullivan, that infamous pinky miss nearly a decade ago now, in the 2014 World Final against Mark Selby. Something of a turning point in that final, frankly. And a lot of people say, oh, that shot, I can't forget it. Just can't get it out of my head. And we thought, well, let's try and see if there's any more shots. And there are quite a few, so we got those coming up then soon. But more tournament matters before we get there, Phil. And right, it's only right and proper that I come to you first for the latest set of qualifiers, this time for the International Championship, which have been held in Sheffield at Ponds Forge. Or Fons Porge, as a journalist that used to be on the circuit, always referred to it. Now you've been there. Tell us about it. Lots of interesting matches. I think you pointed out on social media it was kind of a bit low key, but that's the nature of qualifying, eh?
It is, yeah. It's a bit of a shame though, because you can go in and watch, and some people were, but not very many. And I'm not sure how many people know about it really, because there's a great lineup. I mean, I was there yesterday, Thursday. And you've got players like Lisowski, Allen, Williams, Selby, Kyron, amongst many others. So for a tenner all day or £8 concessions, then it's great value to watch those four tables. I don't know. Even if you went into Ponds Forge, it wouldn't be that obvious. And I had a look on WST website. There's nothing really saying it that I could see. Even if you click on the ticket section, there isn't this mentioned. I haven't seen any posts on social media. So, that is a shame, really, because, it's there to be seen. And they must put in some effort, you know, to get all the seating up and, you know, go through the processes that you need to host a certain amount of people. So for I guess, just people not to know about it, yeah, is a shame. So hopefully that can improve in the future, because there's some good snooker to watch there. Best of 11s, you know, a lot of big names. I guess because it is best 11s, we haven't seen too many shocks. There's been some really good performances, though. We mentioned Gary Wilson last week, I think, his slow start to the season, but he has a great performance. You know, he would have been heavy favourite to beat Mohamed Ibrahim, but breaks of 103, 89, 64, 103 again, and 94. Mm. It doesn't matter who you're playing if you're making scores like that. Mm. So very impressive there. I suppose one of the shocks, and this was a great performance from Liam Pullen, teenager, great 6-4 win over Graham Dott. Couple of centuries in there for Liam. Graham lost the first frame on the 3-miss rule. Mm. So we've seen that a couple of times recently. But yeah, fantastic. Probably his best result so far as a pro for Liam. And I was watching till late last night, Jamie Jones 6-4 against Ash Carty. That was going past midnight. So not too many other shocks I've seen that I can remember. Joe Perry lost against Dylan Emery. He's struggling for form at the minute, 6-3 to Dylan. Watched a bit of that. That was a bit of a struggle from both, really. But otherwise, it is a good setup there. But as I say, it's not enough people going to watch it. And I spoke to a couple of players down there. I spoke to Jack Lasaski afterwards. He was saying the conditions are great and everything, so no complaints from the players. Hopefully just if more people could know about it, that'd be good.
Remind me of the price. It's about a tenner, isn't it?
Yeah, tenner or £8 for concessions. Not exactly sure what counts as a concession, but there was an old chap going in as I got there yesterday for £8. So you get an awful lot of snooker for your money. And top players, best of 11s. It's good stuff.
Mm. Yeah, and it's that contrast thing. We say that, you know, almost a two-tier situation, really, during the snooker season. Yeah, a lot of snooker is expensive now, actually, and much more than it ever has been in the history of the game. The Crucible being the obvious example. Some of those, you know, the very front row seats for the hospitality are an absolute fortune, King's Ransom. But even the ones at the back are, you know, fairly expensive, really. Same for the Masters. Some of the other big events as well. I think tour championship tickets tend to be quite expensive, but there are tickets which are great value as well. So, you know, and that feels like more of an old school thing. But absolute broken record for me. My view is that snooker was undersold for a long time. And, I remember even not that many years ago, it was sort of dirt cheap to go and watch nearly everything. And you sort of think, well, maybe, you know, the problem is it was probably undersold and the rises have been too steep because of that. And it had been more gradual and perhaps developed, you know, more of a kind of, what's that word when things happen slowly, incrementally, then that might have been a sort of better thing. But anyway, very good value. And that Liam Pullen and Graham Dott caught my eye, I have to say. Great win for the York teenager there, the 18-year-old against the former world champion. And had a look through his results, actually, Liam, to remind myself so far. It's not his first win on tour, but I think by a long way it's his most noteworthy. Just the 28 years difference between them, Phil. That's all. Breaks of, you mentioned them there. 119, 51, 101, 59 for Pullen. Yeah, what is it about this 3-miss rule? That's three now, isn't it? Alfie Bird and Graham, I can't think now who the third one was. There was one in between, wasn't there? It might come to me. I might have to look it up before. Was it Padgett? No, I can't remember now. But it's happening quite a lot. I think it's one of those things that I'm sure they feed off each other in a funny kind of way, that these things in snooker. In the way that when you're at tournaments, we've seen it at the Crucible, actually, you think, Maximum's coming. It's like there's something in the air. They all sort of spread, and it's just funny the way it happens. It shouldn't happen, really. You know, nearly all the time you see them, you think, play a different shot. And the problem is, with the third time, it is nearly always the case that the shot that they'll just have to play eventually will lead them in trouble. It'll leave the other guy with a big chance because they are in that much trouble. But you still think, you know, just percentages, just even if it's a relatively containing safety or an attempt at one, but just, you know, they seem to just play the same shot, and that's sort of crazy, really. But he says from the armchair,
It was Padgett. It was against Hawkins. He lost 6-0, so well remembered there. Yeah, and strangely, I mean, those three players we mentioned, they're Padgett, Dot and Burden. And that's an awful lot of experience between those three. It's not sort of youngsters making silly mistakes. I wonder why that is. I guess maybe a younger player may have just... maybe just more likely to like, oh, I'll just hammer it into the reds and see what happens. But these sort of grizzled veterans are like, no, I'm not going to give them an inch. I'll stick to my one shot and roll up very softly onto this red and just make the mistake. But yeah, it's a strange one. And that one against Pullman was the very first frame. So it's exactly the sort of little boost if you're a youngster going against a former world champion. Oh, I'll have the first frame for free. Thank you very much. Strange. You don't see him very often for a while, and then three all at once, like London buses, as the phrase goes. International Championship qualifying still going. As we say, we're talking on Friday morning. So there's some games going on as we speak. Oh, actually, live scores. This will be completely irrelevant by the time you hear it. But Marco Fu against Robert Milkins, as we say. Marco, such a nightmare. Just guy hanging around in the lower reach of the rankings for the top players. Marco's 3-1 up at the minute. So we'll see what happens there. But yeah, ongoing for a day or so more.
Well, I think we could do with maybe a strapline one day, but I think maybe this will be completely irrelevant by the time you hear it. There's not one we'll go for. But yeah, of course, you're absolutely right. In this fast-moving world, that probably applies to a lot of our content. Various big hitters have been winning, Phil, as you sort of alluded to. Among them, Mark Williams, Mark Selby, Mark Allen, Stuart Bingham. And for a full list of results, go to snooker.org. International Championship qualifying continue. We've seen loads of qualifiers we seem to have had lately, but of course, you know, the good news is that means we've got loads of tournaments coming soon, which we know. And, you know, so it'll all start to make sense a little bit more when we get into the sort of main stages of those events. And we should move on again, perhaps, Phil, and say that the UK Women's Championship is getting underway and will give us some fine action over this weekend. The event is at the aforementioned Northern Snooker Centre in Leeds. I saw a bit of copy about it, actually, and I noticed in that there's 11 different countries represented in the field, which is great news, frankly. Very good to see. And I think the usual suspects will be among the favourites, won't they? Rhian Evans has won this title just 11 times. That's all, Phil. Just 11 for Rhian. Also in the field, world champion Bipat, last year's world championship winner Mink Nutrirat, three times former world champion on Yi, and twice the runner-up at this event, the UK Championship, Rebecca Kenner. So we'll bring you all the news, the results and details of who's won and everything else when we're next with you here on Talking Snooker. But a really nice event. That tour does go from strength to strength, and we'll look forward to sort of following the action over the weekend at one of our very best clubs in Leeds.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, it'll be those sort of five of the big hitters of the minute. So it'd be lovely to see if you can see anyone emerge from the field to challenge those guys. But yeah, I guess if you were putting any money on it, would be one of those five. But yeah, we love the Northern, don't we? Great venue. Final on Saturday or Sunday, but this weekend anyway. Yeah. So keep an eye out on World Women's social media. They'll be keeping you updated there. And I imagine plenty of lovely photos from Matt Hewitt. It takes some great pics there while he's doing all sorts of jobs, keeping these tournaments running, but also for being a top photographer while he's there. So, yeah, keep an eye on that stuff.
He really is a very busy man indeed during these events, yes. And we look forward to that. So loads going on in snooker at the moment. And, it's lucky we've got so many lovely podcasts to listen to reflect that, Phil. And this is one of those. You are listening here to Talking Snooker with Phil Haig and Nick Metcalf. Phil, we have a nice set of correspondence here. People are quite engaged with these shots they can't get out of their heads. We all have them. We all have them. As I say, mentioned earlier, I put a video up of that infamous Ronnie O'Sullivan miss pink. And I think our friend Lula mentioned that she'd see it on her deathbed. We've taken the deathbed element out of it. It's a little bit morbid. People just want a nice little relaxing listen about snooker. Don't want to think too much about their deathbeds, I'm guessing. So we're just going to say shots you can't get out of your head. And should we kick off then? Let's have Dave Mitchell here Hi, Nick and Phil, first time emailer, but a huge fan of the podcast. You, along with Dave, Shabnam, Sean and Phils, really are leading the way with the snooker pods. And I hope WST and Stephen Hendry highlight this in their new one. Well, I'm not a gambling man, Phil, but I don't think the chances of that are enormously high. We'll see. My top five shots I think about, says Dave here. Ken's Miss Black for a 147 and a huge paycheck. Ronnie's left-handed black to get his 1,000th century. The Sean Murphy black off three cushions in the middle bag at the Crucible, I believe. Trump's outrageous green at the German Masters. The ball seemed to be possessed. I love that. It did seem to be possessed. Yeah, nice way of saying it. And Hendry's Miss Black for the Masters. Well, I mean, just a absolute catalogue of memories coming to the head there. Yeah, I mean, I've got myself a bit of a tizzy about that Hendry shot. I put a bit, it might have been even early this year, maybe last year, put a still up of that. And listen, I'm very, very ordinary at snooker, Phil. You can testify to that. But I think I know enough about the game to know that that black was awkward, maybe in the extreme, playing across the nap, slow. It was anything but easy. But I still say, because I put a freeze frame of that moment up, I'd still say you'd back Hendry 8 or 9 times out of 10 to get it. He was still the preeminent force in snooker. He was still world number one, although John Higgins, a few months later, actually took that position over from him when he won the world title. But he won a multitude of world championships. He was the number one player in the game. And it was a hell of a miss, hell of a moment. And, you know, Mark Williams is the one to benefit from it, of course, winning that famous Masters final. But, yeah, the Ronnie 1,000th century was just a magic piece of snooker, actually. Everything about it. I love that clip, the embrace with Neil, the commentary, the setting, the crowd going mad. Brilliant. Yeah, Sean Murphy shot. What a shot that was. Sean is very good at pulling those sort of magic shots out of the bag, which is why perhaps they call him the magician. Not a big fan of snooker nicknames, but I don't mind that one. And Ken, I mean, I'm not sure we said it to him here in these terms, but obviously people will mostly, I would think and hope, mention his world title. But probably not far behind is that black eight, because it was such a massive moment. And I mentioned the Trump one. That was just an incredible snooker shot. So, yeah, I mean, please, wax lyrical there, Phil. All those are just memorable, memorable shots.
Yeah, of course they are. Yeah, I think Ken said he gets sort of asked about that missed black as much as anything.
Yeah.
I remember Matthew Stevens' face. He's playing Stevens, isn't he? And he just can't believe it either. I mean, that's the thing when any of these missed blacks on the 147s, all the ones that I can think of anyway, they're pretty straightforward. After they've done all the hard work, it's pretty rare that you leave yourself really horrible on the final black. But it's just a big twitches, isn't it? A bit of a nightmare there, because not so much now, actually, but back then, there were enormous prizes on the line, not just the kudos of making a maximum, but I think there was a sports car on the line for that one, if I remember correctly, at the Masters. Bit of a nightmare. But we'll move on to the next one. And see, I'll just say, by the way, the UK Women's Championship, it runs till Sunday. I don't know, I've got Saturday written here, so I'll just clear that up there. But this next bit of correspondence, Anthony Gibson. Hello, Phil and Nick. Really enjoying the podcast. On the subject of shots I can't get out of my head, the 1992 World Final, Jimmy White v Stephen Hendry. The score is 14-10 to Jimmy, and he's 31 ahead, but misses the last red. Knew then that Jimmy would lose, and the comeback from Hendry was unstoppable. Cheers, Anthony. Does that one stick out to you, Nick?
A little bit less than the shots Jimmy missed at 14-8 and 14-9, actually, which had happened more. Correspondents pointed out they're the sort of ones that get the attention. But I did look this up, and I'd kind of forgotten that Jimmy was in charge of that frame, and it wasn't an absolute gimme red by any means. It was kind of along the cushion, but yeah, it was big. I mean, I think I'm not going to say definitely the writing was on the wall at 14-10, but 14-11 and the way Hendry came back to win that, and then once it went to 12-13, it was absolute slow motion nightmare for Jimmy fans. But I think, as I was careful to say on social media, for those that supported Stephen Hendry, it was wonderful. And Listen, the majority would have been on Jimmy's side, but not everybody. There's a bit of a, I think the myth actually mostly applies to Steve. There's a myth that nobody supported Steve Davis, and that's absolutely not true. In fact, quite a lot of my good friends, very good friends in life, actually, were big Steve fans. And some of them might say they didn't shout about it too much because, you know, you didn't want to necessarily, because he was, you know, people were, on the whole, you know, in the country, I think, it would have been not wanting Steve to win because of that butchish thing of not liking winners a lot of the time, frankly. But Steve had a lot of fans. And maybe it's a bit of less of the case with Hendry, but Hendry certainly had his fans too, very much so. So, yeah, it was just an unbelievable world final, that. I mean, the 92 and 94 ones, I mean, for Jimmy to lose them both, my goodness me. I know we're going over old ground here decades ago, but absolutely, yeah. And thank you for remembering that, Anthony. And I can see why, you know, having looked at it again, why you can't get that particular shot out of your head. Let's move on to friend of the podcast, Gareth Williams. Got to be this one. I mean, Gareth put a video up, which is very kind, but obviously I'll explain it a bit more. This is an audio service. He says, got to be this one from Judd Trump against John Higgins in the 2019 World Final when Judd was 5-4 down. It was a brilliant long red with deep screw. Absolutely brilliant shot. And Gareth said it was that shot which preceded what can only be described as snooker out of this world from Trump. That shot changed the whole dynamic of the match. It essentially won him the title. I don't remember John being ahead early on like that. I mean, Judd was absolutely dominant. I was in the press seats for a lot of that final, and he was absolutely brilliant. I think he would have dominated the session after that, frankly. But yeah, it was close early on, but yeah, what a shot it was. And it reminded me of a shot that I saw in those press seats, sitting next to Joe Downs, actually, a journalist I know that was at that tournament, big motorsport journalist, actually, lovely chap. And we were just absolutely enraptured by that whole session. It was Higgins that nearly got a 147, if you remember, in the first frame of that session. But I don't know if it was the penultimate or the last of the session. Trump was on a 147 attempt. And I think it was about two or three reds from the end. Outrageous shot from Judd. Knocked the red in. Difficult red, knocked another red off the cushion and got on the black. And I think, you know, I said, and a couple of others have said as well, had he made a 147, it would get more attention. It was a brilliant shot. But frankly, Phil, you know, you can take your pick from that world final. I mean, how exhilarating was Judd in that match?
Yeah, it's as high a standard as there's ever been a match, really, because John didn't really do much wrong. Maybe he tailed away towards the end when it really sort of became just completely overwhelming. But yeah, they were going head to head for a lot of the early stages. And then Trump just went mad, didn't he? Yeah. And I hadn't remembered that very specific shot. But yeah, it was incredible. I know that was, John has said before, like that's the easier of those World Championship final losses to take because What can you do? Even if you're as good as John Higgins, you can't feel like you can do much when someone plays like that against you. So, you know, slightly easier to take in those terms.
Very much so, yeah. The other ones, which one of the two does he say? I think it's the Selby one. He says that really, I always come back to it, you know. Mark said to me in an interview, he saw John's body language on the last morning of the tournament at the practice table, and he thought, I'm not going to say he thought he got him, but he thought, that's not good body language from John. He was 10-7 ahead, but he was acting like he was behind because that was so Selby. I think it was 10-4. He looked an absolute broken man, Mark. He looked so, so tired. He just, you know, he looked like he just didn't want to be out there. Somehow mustered up the energy and the tenacity to win three frames in a row. And at 10-7, different game. That's the beauty of the Crucible. We know that. But, And those long formats and that particular, you know, magic of that tournament. But I think you've got Ian McCoon next.
I have. The shot I can't get out of my mind is a missed green from Andrew Higginson in the Welsh Open final against Neil Robertson. I think if he pots that and the next couple of balls, he wins the title. Yeah, well, that's the kind of thing we were looking for when we said not the completely obvious ones. So good stuff from Ian there. That obviously hadn't sprung to my mind. Well, I say obviously. Yeah, maybe it had, but it hadn't sprung to my mind. I don't know if that sprung to yours, Nick.
And I looked it up. It was 07, and I do have sort of vaguish memories of it. But No, not particularly, I have to say. And it's just one of those funny things. Higginson came so close to winning a big title. I mean, that would have been, by, you know, such a career highlight. It's just, you know, and it was a young Neil at that time. So it was, a really exciting final. But yeah, that was the, yeah. I think there's more value to come in this. I think we're going to keep this open, aren't we? Because I think listen, what you pick whatever shots you like, you know, I'm sure honesty will be important. It has to be in your head type thing, but we'd love it if they were those more sort of it, you know, perhaps slightly lesser known players from that sort of middle ranking type players, you know, and, you know, particular shots, as I mentioned, you know, oh, that Gary Wilkinson blew on that rainy Thursday afternoon. That was that's the kind of thing. You saw Gary this week, didn't you? You said, and yeah, that's the kind of thing we're looking for. But yeah, I mean, look, we are so spoiled for choice over the years. There are just so many unbelievable shots. You know, if you just think in mind's eye, someone said to you, think about some of the most amazing shots in snooker or some of the most memorable shots. It's just, you'd be there all day and all night and you still wouldn't have got halfway through. There are just so many big matches, drama. Was it a kick Dave Gilbert got in that against Higgins, that moment? Yeah. And that was desperate for Dave. Things like that. Three or four other big kicks would come to my mind if I thought about it more. The old Steve, no. I think one of the greatest piece of one word commentaries ever from Ted Lowe, that. No, said so much just like that. Spoke for the nation, couldn't believe it. So much intonation in that moment and that, just in that one note from him. Dennis's pot to win it, of course. And yeah, it just that Jimmy Miss Black. And I mean, just go on and on over the years. One that's funny enough, just a sort of half random one now I'm thinking through them. And I watched nearly the whole of this from the press seats. I think one of the great, great matches of modern crucibles for me was that Bingham Trump semi. And a ridiculous plant that Stuart took on. I think it was a red onto a red. And I know I'm quite mean about plants sometimes. I think the crowd are ridiculous. They applaud them when you can't miss them. But this was a really mad one to take on. He did it. And it just, I don't know if you remember, it was on the black cushion. It was just the most wonderful shot. I might have to dig a video of it, actually, and put it out to follow this up. But things like that. But listen, I'm sure, you know, like all snooker people, Phil, you'll have about a million in your head.
Oh yeah, there's loads. Yeah, funnily enough, the one that like leaps into my mind is that black that Murphy potted against Kyron in the Crucible semi a couple of years ago, when because it had a bit of everything really. I think he was 11-8 behind, and that frame had gone to the black, and they had a bit of safety, and he left himself that really. Well, Kyron left him a really difficult long black to the extent where Dennis on commentary was saying, "Oh, will he take this on? Not really sure." And he absolutely crunches it in, and he makes the best noise. If you like that sort of like thud into the leather, because he hits it pretty hard. And then he does that famous big fist pump afterwards, and the crowd goes mad. And there's a clip of Kyron like walking off very annoyed, putting his mask on, because that was the time when that had to be done. There's a clip of that going, if you Google it. So that is well worth a watch. So yeah, I mean, if I had to think about it more, then there'd be other shots probably there. But in terms of one that leaps into your mind, that one always seems to do it for me because it's got a bit of everything. So yeah, great shot from Sean. And I was just looking at Higginson's. I mean, this is the kind of thing, if the Athletic covered snooker, this is the kind of thing they'd do. They'd do a deep dive into Andrew Higginson's 2007 Welsh Open run. But it's amazing, really. He came through qualifying. He was 500 to one outsider. Then he beat Marco Fu, John Higgins, Michael Judge, Ali Carter, and Stephen Maguire. Wow. To make the final against Neil Robertson.
Wow.
And he was Robertson had to win the last three frames to win 9-8. Higginson made two centuries in the final. So yeah, what a week he had there. Absolutely incredible stuff. And it could easily have been a title. And he just a really good player, but showed it that week, and he hadn't quite been able to replicate that kind of form much else the rest of his career, but shows what these guys can do. Who are sort of often sort of knocking about in the middle rankings or even off tour as he has been recently. But yeah, a lot of quality around.
It's amazing how did he put that together. I mean, it's just, it made me think earlier, sort of different kind of thing really, but the vagaries of form, like how did Gary Wilson suddenly whack all those bloody incredible breaks in? He's hardly been able to do anything this season. He suddenly finds it, you know. It's just, Yeah, I mean, if you could bottle up the answer to that, of course, you'd make a fortune. But those shots, I mean, we'd love to hear more of them. Also, just from a selfish point of view, it's nice to remember some of them ourselves, and we don't remember them. You know, you think, oh, of course, that one. That was a semi, wasn't it, you mentioned there, where I don't remember the exact words, but I think, you know, obviously, Corey was annoyed. Oh, you know, Sean's up to loads of theatrics. I think Sean said, well, it is a theatre. We had Sean on not long after on here, didn't he? And he was pretty unrepentant about that. And I think rightly, I don't think Corey had a case at all there. I mean, I think he was just annoyed he lost, wasn't he? That's the way it goes. Both those beaten semi-finalists that year, Stuart Bingham and the other, didn't have an awful lot of a leg to stand on. They were just annoyed, which you understand, because they're brutal defeats, those.
Yeah, but I think Kyron has sort of stuck to that, and other people have problems with that, has come up with like the fist pumping thing. People in general don't like it, but I don't agree with that at all. Like, especially when it happens, it only ever happens at the end of a frame. You know, if people were doing it after shots or after your opponent missed or something, that would be bad. But I mean, in what other sport does something happen and you celebrate it and people have a problem with it? It'd be like saying you can't celebrate goals. You can only celebrate the end of the match. Obviously, that doesn't happen, does it? So, yeah, I mean, but yeah, there's very sort of fine lines of what is etiquette and not in snooker. And yeah, a lot of people do have sort of problems with giving it the big one during a match, but not for me, especially, well, at the end of the frame, at the end of a session or anything, do what you want. Actually, not do what you want. I think that could get out of hand, but a little fist bump to the crowd, I've got no problem with that at all.
I've got Alex Higgins in my head there when you're saying do what you want. He was a bit of a do what you want person, wasn't he, back in the day? I think we've done about an hour, Phil, and that's about average for our, unless we got one of our real blockbusters. That's kind of what we've been doing lately. I think it's quite a nice length, actually, frankly, and maybe we should move on to any other business. The 900 is back. And I've been watching some of the late night action from Reading. And what the highlight has to be that clearance from Marcus Deo. I mean, bloody hell, that was absolutely sparkling stuff. I mean, look at the table. It wasn't in his favour at all. I mean, that has been the best thing I've seen, certainly, so far. Josh Tamond made it through to Grand Finals week. And we also saw Tony Knowles play some nice stuff. So a real fun start to the event. I noticed Dennis Taylor's playing. I thought he stopped to make a big deal about retiring. He's back.
Yeah, he did that. I think he's done that a couple of times, but he keeps getting dragged out to play in these things. But yeah, he'll be one to watch there. Yeah, there's been some dramatic things. Yeah, that clearance was amazing. Great result for Josh Tomlin, because that was a tough first week there. Lots of good players. There was another amazing, was that Florian Nussler, who appears to be sort of, whenever he gets a mention in anything, it's because he's just sort of narrowly lost something really heartbreaking. Seems to be one of the unluckiest players in snooker. I say unlucky, actually. He sort of went and knocked, he potted a blue, I think, and then knocked the yellow in, and that allowed Tony Knowles to, there was 10 seconds left, and he just had to wind down the clock, and he knocked a red in. So, Nussler was on the wrong end of that Deo clearance as well. So that's what I mean. He seems to be sort of not, he's often in sort of viral clips and stuff, but not on the right end of it. But he's a very good player, and I imagine he'll be on tour very soon and make a good impression. But yeah, good start to the tournament there. A lot of people watching. I saw a lot of buzz on social media. So next week, I saw the lineup there. Not got it in front of me, but Joe Johnson was playing and only he's playing. And obviously a few more players. So yeah, that'll be Monday to Wednesday next week.
Yeah, exactly. Late night viewing after the Greyhounds, so they've on Sporty Stuff TV. And I found it very easy to go to that website and look at the stream on there. So, you know, it's not hard to find various ways to watch it. And, well, I'm not sure if you've got much else to say, Phil. I mean, it's tournament play all the way, isn't it? British Open underway on Monday in Cheltenham. The English Open the week after in Brentford. In Brentford? Bloody hell. Brentwood. Don't go to Brentford. Do not go to Brentford, okay? And to turn up at the stadium or roundabout, you know, that parish queue and roundabout Westland. Where's the tournament? It's not there. It's in Brentwood. Very important to make that clarification there. But two really good tournaments coming up, and we really look forward to them. Lots of viewing, lots of big news stories coming all the time, no doubt. We'll get a bit more of an idea now who's in form, won't we? You know, the season's starting to progress. some of those that, you know, early informed players, we'll see if they can maintain that. So yeah, really looking forward to it. And I think we'll just say to our listeners, so happy viewing, everybody, eh?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, plenty to look forward to. It's just going to be almost non-stop till Christmas now. So yeah, dig in, get comfy on the sofa. Well, hopefully, if you're getting along to these tournaments, so let us know what the experience is like in Cheltenham. We're always interested to know any sort of details. You know, how comfy are the seats? What are the food situation like? You know, could you meet any players? Was there anything to do in breaks? So yeah, do give us a shout if you're down in Cheltenham. And as always, thanks for listening here.
Are you going to one of those? I know you mentioned you might be at one time.
Yeah, well, there's a small debate going on in my house about who gets the car on Monday, because I want to go to Cheltenham to the British Open, and Bella wants to go to Manchester to a Shania Twain gig. So it's a real classic head-to-head. Ooh. Do I get to go to Cheltenham or does she get to go to Manchester? I mean, we'll both be, you know, the train is an option. So there's heated debates going on at the minute, but I might go for the afternoon and need to be back. We'll see. But, you know, Shania Twain in Manchester is a strong argument from my other half.
Shania Twain or Ben Wollaston, they're both big entertainers in their respective fields.
It's the classic contest, isn't it? I mean, households all over the world have had to answer that question, Wollaston or Twain.
Yeah, well, good luck with that. You may get along there. I will hopefully be at Brentwood for at least one or two of the sessions after that. Great to see you, Phil. Have a nice weekend and week to come for the British. I'll join you next time. And, yeah, just look forward to the tournaments to come. And, yeah, I've enjoyed nattering away with snooker with you, as I always do.
Yeah, always a pleasure. Good to see you. And thanks, everyone, for listening.
Keep your thoughts coming to us, Ed, on any snooker matter. Some of those shots you can't get out of your head, or if you're going to Cheltenham, want to let us know about it, please do. We always love those. TalkingSnooker@yahoo.com or tweet us at TalkingSnooker. We very much appreciate your company. We couldn't do it without you. Well, we could, but it wouldn't be half the service, let's be honest. And for now, Phil and myself, cheerio.
Sports Social Podcast Network.